Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 180 of the best stations in the country, and XM Satellite 166 to boot. On Sunday, October 14th, 2012, this is episode 918. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into high-definition video conferencing. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today at GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code TECH. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. That's Stamps.com, offer code Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the iPhone 5 at Gazelle.com. Well, a good day to you. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, any kind of digital jazz, and a guy in a space capsule 128,168 feet above the Earth who's about to jump out of it. That's crazy talk. I guess they were going to do this last week. And the winds somewhere down below him were insufficient. This would be the highest, free fall parachute jump in history. I mean, look, the guy, you can see, they have cameras up there. And it looks like where he is above the atmosphere. You can see the curvature of the Earth. So it really, and he's wearing a spacesuit. Of course he is. There's no air up there. And it's pretty darn cold. But I bet he'll get some great shots. It's kind of amazing how high quality the video is from up there. What? So sometimes we use technology for good, sometimes for evil, and sometimes just for silly stuff. Like, how high can you jump out of something? Now he's getting out of the capsule. I guess he's got a parachute. Although at that height, it doesn't really matter. He's going to fall quite a way. How long is the free fall, John? It's like 5 minutes. It's a long way down. He will break the sound barrier just by falling because there's no air up there to slow him down. Well, it's kind of a physics experiment. Wild stuff. But that's not what we're here to talk about, although we could. 8888 Ask Leo. There's quite a bit of technology in doing this nutty thing. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside of the U.S., then you might want to use Skype or some other VoIP solution, and it'd still be toll free. Wouldn't cost you a Skype cent. One Skype cent. 8888 Ask Leo. he's going 470, 490, 500, 520, five. Oh, well, he's going down fast, miles an hour. Crazy. what is the sound barrier? 700 miles an hour? He's about to break that. There he goes. Listen for the sonic boom. He's going quite fast. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. Got my new cell phone. I'm excited about that. No, not the iPhone 5. By the way, when the iPhone 5 came out, people were saying, you know, watch out because it's a different material now. The old one was glass front and back. And the new one is glass front, that nice Gorilla Glass 2, which is pretty darn tough. And metal on the back with glass top and bottom for the antenna. And an important point is that every material you use to make a phone has a trade-off. So glass is hard, but brittle. So if you hit it right, it shatters. The metal is somewhat less hard, but it will scratch and ding and nick. And the anodized aluminum that they're using for the bevel around the iPhone is extremely soft, I have to say. It's so soft that I have in, how long have I had this, a week? 2 weeks. I have, without, to my knowledge, dropping it, I have nicked it, I mean gouged it, I mean it's ugly, several times. It looks like a terrier's been chewing on it, all the way around that beautiful bezel. And it's funny, it brings up an interesting paradox with these iPhones, because they're not made out of plastic, which, you know, plastic is somewhat tougher, but not as elegant. And, you know, Apple likes to make things out of beautiful materials like glass and anodized aluminum. The problem is that this, you know, these materials are not maybe as robust as a good, strong polycarbonate. And the paradox is, here is this beautiful design. I mean, the iPhone 5, the newest iPhone, is probably the most beautiful they've ever made. I mean, it just feels like an elegant Swiss watch, beautifully milled. But if you don't put it in a case, it will start looking like it's, within 2 weeks, in my case, like it's pretty darn beat up. And it's got little jagged edges where the gouges are. I mean, it's just really is... But on the other hand, you put it in a case, well, you might as well have anything, because the case is made out of what? Polycarbonate plastic. So it's just a little frustrating, frankly. And it's not Apple. Apple can't, you know, repeal the laws of physics. They're going to use, when they use a material, each material has its flaws and each material has its pluses. I'd complain because of the, the glass and how easy it was to break and the original. I said, well, you know, this is because both my kids have shattered them. Everybody I know, I never shattered mine, but I don't carry it around as much, and maybe I'm a little bit careful. Anyway, just a word of warning, big gouges in your iPhone 5 if you're not careful. Get a case, but then why buy the iPhone 5 for its beauty? Because, well, I guess you could take it out and admire it at night. Put it on a little pedestal with a light shining on it, rotating. And then that way at night you would say, oh, I have the most beautiful objet d'art in my house. Look at that. And then you just put it in a ballistic case when you take it out of the house. I mean, you do that with a Cartier diamond, or I don't know, maybe you wouldn't. Diamond, maybe that's, Apple should be using diamonds. That would work, and it would only add slightly to the overall cost of the phone. Meanwhile, I got the newest phone. I know, I just got an iPhone 5, but I really wanted to try the Galaxy Note 2. I don't know if you remember the Note, the original Note, which came out, I think more than a year ago, and was surprisingly popular given its size. It was a 5-inch screen. It was giant. People said, oh, you look like you're holding a giant Hershey bar to your head. It's so big. It's ugly. And I just fell in love with it because it just has such a beautiful big screen, and it's easy to use. And it's like a combination phone and tablet. So I can do a lot of the things I would do with a tablet I can easily do on the phone. It was a big seller. I can't remember how many they sold, 10 million, something like that. You combine that with the Galaxy S3, which has been very successful for Samsung, and you've got the number two phone company in the world after Apple. They're selling them like hotcakes. They can't keep them in stock. So the Galaxy Note 2 came out in Europe a few weeks ago. Will be coming out in the U.S. in a couple of weeks. And as is my wont, I ordered the unlocked European version so I could try it. Now, this does not, the disadvantage of doing that, besides the fact that you're paying on an unsubsidized price, in my case over $700 for a 16-gig phone, the other disadvantage is you're not getting LTE. Because the European phones don't support the LTE in the United States. So that's kind of a disadvantage. But I get to play with it a little earlier, and I have to say, very impressed. If you're a Verizon customer, an AT&T customer, or a Sprint customer, you'll really be, I think you should take a look at this phone. Some people won't want it because it's so big. Now, it still fits as a guy. It fits in my shirt pocket, no problem. It's not so big that it doesn't. As a woman, I guess it'd fit in your purse just fine. And the screen is gorgeous. It does some interesting things. For instance, I was surprised to find this out. I didn't know ahead of time. This does windowing. You can have two windows open at the same time, which is, it's so big, you actually can do it. This is something that they've done on their tabs, the Galaxy Tab 10.1. They call it a note as well. But I hadn't seen it on a phone before. That's how big this phone is. It has two windows. I'm not saying you should buy it, but I'm saying you should take a look at it. Very impressive phone. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm just cranky. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just a cranky individual. All right, I'll say it. I observed that we covered this in more detail on, you know, this was a big story compared to, let's say, landing, you know, a Volkswagen-sized space laboratory on Mars. That was, you know, as a footnote. But a guy jumps out of an airplane 100 or whatever that was, 128,000 feet. Now, that's news. Okay. It's because it's Red Bull. That Wes says in our chat room, it's Red Bull. There's money involved. Yeah, that's true. It's sponsored. Now, why don't we let that's an interesting question. Why don't we let Red Bull sponsor the Mars exploration then? That would be awesome. I guess they don't want to put ads on Mars. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere. If you want to visit our website, techguylabs.com, you'll find there a link to our chat room where you can join the conversation and help me with your answers to my questions. 8888-ASK-LEO, techguylabs.com. Yeah, thank goodness we beat the Russians to the jumping out of the thing in 128. Thank goodness we beat the Ruskies. All right, let's see here. Let's get to the phones. Jim in Winchester, Georgia, or California. Sometimes a G looks like a C or vice versa. Jim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hello, Leo. Thank you very much for your show. I enjoyed it extremely.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful show.
Bless you. Thank you.
I live in Winchester, California. I live on a ranch, and the high-tech services that we have are electric power and propane.
Right.
What I'm using is Verizon broadband for my internet service, but I'm only getting 2 out of 4 bars. Is there any way I can increase that strength to improve my signal?
The issue, of course, is your distance from the cell site. If you have line of sight to it, you might be able to improve your reception by getting an external antenna. And there are a number of companies that sell these that picks up the signal and then kind of retransmits it into your home. In other words, with an antenna that's more directional, it's kind of aimed at the cell site, you probably would be able to improve the reception.
No, I don't. I've got a hill that's blocking.
Yeah,
in between some small hills.
That makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are a number of companies. You can go to sellantenna.com. They sell, C-E-L-L antenna.com. They sell, special receivers and antennas and so forth, and repeaters, Yagi antennas that are more directional, cell phone boosters.
Okay.
You probably want to look at the ones that are specifically for Verizon's are you getting LTE or 3G?
LTE.
Yeah, good. Well, that's, you know, the good news is if you can get that going, you're faster probably than a landline, Comcast or that kind of internet would be. LTE is amazing. So I would visit sellantenna.com and take a look. They're one of many companies, but they specialize in exactly this problem. And you're going to want to get not a general antenna, because that just improves the cell phone, the voice. You're going to want to get an LTE repeater, and they make one. They're not cheap, $500. It's designed for AT&T or Verizon LTE. They say up to 70 dB gain, which is a lot. That'll give you 5 bars.
Okay.
And but again, you know, you might call them because in general, you know, line of sight's going to be better than that hills is kind of your problem right there. You may not even be that far from the cell tower.
It could very well be. I'm not exactly sure where it's at.
Yeah. This would do it, and it doesn't have to be line of sight, but the frequencies that they're using are high enough frequencies that the hill is definitely blocking it.
Okay.
Another one is that the chat room is telling me, W4RDM is telling me, is Wilson Electronics. And I've used them before. They're good also. So they're
very good.
Yeah, this is not unusual. And, you know, it's great that you at least have that as an option.
Yes. Oh, really?
You know, I mean, a lot of people live in rural areas. This is what keeps me. I mean, it's beautiful. And it's, you know, wide open skies and everything. But that's the thing that keeps me there is I need high speed internet. At least you get electricity. You know, that was what happened, of course. The reason you get electricity is because during the Depression, we went through a rural electrification project all over the country, bringing electricity to rural areas because, of course, it wasn't good business to electrify rural areas. People are spread out too far apart, so you can't make enough money to justify stringing those lines. Same reason you don't have internet. The population density is too low and the distance too great from the central office for the phone company or the cable head end. And so they just, you know, you could call the cable company and said, well, yeah, for, you know, I can't remember what it was because when I was living in the country, it was you know, $500 a foot or something. It was some, they said, yeah, well, you know, you can pay us to trench out to you. It was kind of uneconomical. I think it was going to be a few thousand dollars to do that. And that was, but we were close to the road where the cable line was. If you're really distant, you know, it's impractical. So, I have thought for some time, and I that we need a kind of a rural internetification project. But the good news is it doesn't really have to be as expensive as rural electrification was, because you don't have to send wires. Now we've got great wireless solutions, microwave, wireless solutions, all sorts of wireless ways to do it that would be lots less expensive. But it's still more expensive than a commercial enterprise is going to engage in. It's just not profitable. So you're not going to see Fios coming out your way, Jim, unfortunately. In fact, I'm sad to say, I think Verizon has stopped rolling out Fios, their fiber solution. They rolled it out in some areas. Google now is the interesting player in this one, the one to watch. They just fibered, or they're about to fiber, Kansas City, Missouri, with gigabit internet, both ways, a billion bits per second, both ways. Wow. Just think what you could do with that. So Wilson Electronics makes the cell signal boosters. They're the company. And then CellAntenna.com sells Wilson and other gear. But specifically, you're going to want to look at a 4G booster. You might want voice as well, but they're different frequencies. And, of course, you get the repeater to fit the frequency, not vice versa. 8888 Ask Leo. Billy is in Sacramento, California. Hi, Billy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Hmm.
Thanks for having me.
I'm always looking for a way to be better prepared. And something that I want to do is I want to carry with me some important documents, copies of my prescriptions, my driver's license, insurance policies, things like that. And obviously carrying a digital copy is a lot easier. So I want to put them on a thumb drive or a micro SD or something like that.
Yeah, there are solutions to that. There are commercial solutions and there's roll your own. Hang on, we got to take a break when we come back. Keeping your personal documents with you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking to Billy in Sacramento, California, who has a good idea. He wants to somehow have his most important personal records stored on a thumb drive so that he's got them. In fact, this is in some ways the goal of the Portable Health Care Act, the idea of keeping your health care records with you in some form so that if you have an emergency procedure or you want to change doctors, you just say, here. But there's a long way to go on all of that. There are companies that make, in fact, there was a company, and I just can't find the name of it, that made a USB drive. Remember, they sent me one. You plug it in, and software would run, and you'd fill out all these forms about stuff, and then it would be stored on the drive. That seems like, I mean, you're smart enough. You don't need a form to go through. In fact, you'd probably just like to drag and drop stuff like driver's license, passport, credit cards, and so forth. But you want to keep it secure. So there's a couple of ways to do this if you want to do it on a thumb drive. There are companies like SanDisk that make secure thumb drives, drives with software on them. SanDisk calls it their secure access software that automatically encrypts. It has a password-protected folder on the USB drive. Anything in the folder is automatically encrypted using 128-bit AES, which is very strong encryption. And I think this is a good solution. You get 2 gigs of online backup. And the reason I like that is, what if you lose the thumb drive?
Yeah.
So having it in the cloud as well as having it on the flash drive, I think, is gives you the best of both worlds. A flash drive gives you, you know, access anywhere, even offline. And the cloud means if you lose the thumb drive, because they're easy enough to lose. I keep one on my keychain, but, hey, we've all lost our keys from time to time.
Right.
So this is I like SanDisk, and this is a good solution. It's called their Secure Access software, and they may actually make drives with it built in if you choose a SanDisk.
What I would really like is I would like to be able to have a third party be able to access this. If I was in some car accident and I was unconscious or something like that, I would like to be able to have somebody access it. So what I was really looking for is something cross-platform and real simple, and hopefully I saw like I could install TrueCrypt on it, but
that's the roll-it-yourself solution. Put your own, you're passed out. What's your password? I don't know.
Well, here's what I was thinking. I was thinking, and I'm not sure. Of course, anything can be brute force, but what I was thinking is to have an encrypted or a password-protected zip file on the drive, and then have outside of that zip file have the instructions on how to
have the password tattooed on your wrist. You know what?
Or call my wife and ask her this question, and this is what the password is, or have a few different family members or something like that.
Well, we've all seen the ads for Medic Alert bracelets. Remember that, where you would wear the bracelet if you had a medical condition. It was a known quantity. Any ambulance company, any hospital, any doctor would see the medical, would look, and they'd say, Medic Alert bracelet. And they would call the number, and the people on the phone would say, yes, this person has diabetes, or is allergic to penicillin. That's actually a great solution. And as I remember, and I'm going to have to look, I think Medic Alert may have a USB device now. I'm trying to remember. They make a variety of tags that you can wear. The nice thing about Medic Alert is it's been around for a long time. It's well known.
Yeah.
So it's not, and I think that, but that's just medical, right? It's a really interesting question. You know, for instance, all my bank accounts, all my financial records. If you wanted to get to my 401k, you'd have to know my password. And how do you share that with somebody? In case you pass away, what happens to all this stuff? We're just starting to get into this. Here's a company called Medic Tag that does make a USB Medic Alert tag that you could wear around your neck. Similar idea. It would be private except in a case of emergency. But now it's just for medical information.
And I'm looking for more than that. The prescription part is a big thing, because I have prescriptions for a substance that would otherwise be controlled. And
right.
The prescription gets updated every 60 days, and so it's tough to keep a current version. But it would be nice to, if I ever got into trouble with it, if somebody wanted to give me a hard time, I could just say,
I've got here's my prescription, right.
Yeah,
it's handy just going through the TSA, believe me, with prescriptions. It's nice to have all of these things to hand.
Right. Have you heard of any vulnerabilities for like a compressed archive file, like a zip file or tar file?
Zip password protection is not necessarily the securest in the world. But you could do the same thing, as you said, with TrueCrypt, which is a free open source encryption utility, but somebody would have to have the password. Maybe you'd have a a bracelet or something. Dr. Mom in the chat room is kind of up on HIPAA and other requirements. Is there some... See, I think the problem is there isn't really kind of this universal solution for this.
Yeah, the only problem with TrueCrypt that I saw is that it requires either the host machine has to have the TrueCrypt software,
right,
or it has to have administrator privileges,
right,
in order to access the thing. So if like a police agency was trying to access the file,
right, they'd have to have TrueCrypt running, right?
Privileges is you know, real low. So
this is a really interesting problem. I like it. It's the kind of conundrum that that is fun to solve, and somebody really ought to solve it because I think it's a useful thing. So it's not. So let's just summarize. You'd like to have something you carry around with you that contains, in a way that can be read by a police agency or a physician or a medic, you know, an EMT or I don't know what, you know, but somebody who had need of it, the TSA, with or without your permission, because you might be unconscious. They
right.
could read your medical record, but more than that, you would like other things to be on there, but you'd like to protect them.
Right.
It's a really interesting. Now, somebody in the chat room is pointing us to roadid.com, which is kind of like a medical alert with more, but contains more ID in it. This is a really interesting roadid. If you're a runner, cyclist, or triathlete, or just an active person, in the event of accident, if you can't speak for you, your road ID will, and it's a bracelet. It's like Medic Alert because basically it has names of spouse, brother, whatever you want to put on it.
Right.
It's only $20. Now, what you could do on that is say, I have on my shoelace, they have dog tags too, I have on my shoelace a USB key with all the information you need. The password to unlock it is...
Right.
That's really an interesting a conundrum, Billy, because on the one hand, you want to keep it somewhat secure, but on the other hand, in order to make it work while you're passed out, you have to have the information public in some way.
Yeah, them finding the USB drive is probably... That's the part that is going to be difficult. The password, I think I've got figured out. If I could just have even a label on the outside that says, call my wife or my father,
right,
and ask them what happened on May 1st, 1989, and that's the password. And, you know, it maybe even tell them that it's 12 characters long. And, you know, anybody, they could figure that out.
So there certainly are software solutions that don't require that. Now, if you have to have a computer to read the USB key, but they don't require any particular software on there. The SanDisk solution is a good example. You put it in, software on the USB key drive runs, and if you type in the password, you're in. So that might be the solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I am also a big fan of, and let me tell you about, GoToMeeting. The great folks at Citrix make GoToMeeting better all the time. Perhaps you are familiar with it, the screen sharing. GoToMeeting's got the best screen sharing. Easiest to set up. It uses NAT traversal. You don't have to punch a hole in the firewall. You don't have to know what that means either. It just installs. It's easy. It's fast. And they keep making it better. To wit, they've added now HD faces. So not only are you seeing their screen, which is great for a PowerPoint presentation or, you know, training, working together on a document, collaborating. But wouldn't it be great if you could also see the person while you work together? That's the face-to-face you need. Try it free right now. Go to meeting.com. Click the try it free button. The promo code is tech. You get 30 days free. And after the 30-day trial, $49 a month for all the meetings you want, as long as you want. I got to say, the video is fantastic. It's a great solution. Go to meeting.com. Offer code is tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Really interesting question. And maybe we're getting too high tech with Billy on this. I mean, Billy wants a USB key. The problem is you're in the hospital, you're going to ambulance. They don't have a USB reader to hand. One of our chatters is an ER nurse. And let me see what he says here. He says, what we expect and hope for is a card in the wallet. A card in the wallet. So Dr. Mom, who's also worked in the ER, says, all we look for is either a Medic Alert bracelet or a wallet or ID card. And there's no time, you know, to say, oh, quick, get the computer. Let's, what's the password? Call his wife. Oh, okay, we're going to read that. So I would say for medical information, now I understand Billy has kind of a different need, which I'll explain. But for medical information, like if you have diabetes or you're allergic to, you know, antibiotics or something, a medic alert bracelet seems to me the most well-known way to do it. It's immediately apparent. And they know exactly how to do what to do. And when they make the call, of course, to medical alert, they know how to communicate to the physician in a timely, quick way. Truckee says there's an iPhone app. In case of emergency standard. So I guess this is a ICE, in case of emergency. They have applications for Android and iPhone. That's interesting. But again, the tech has to look for it, and I just feel like that's not yet. Well, they make emergency cards, they have sports team packets, and they do have an iPhone app, an Android app in development. It just seems, you know, this wouldn't be a bad thing to have extra. And for Billy, this might be a solution. See, Billy carries or uses a medication that is a controlled substance. You know, it's not uncommon. For instance, if you have ADD, you might take Adderall. That's methamphetamine, and it's a controlled substance. He's allowed to have it, but he might want some way to demonstrate that this methamphetamine pill I have in my pocket, this Adderall, is mine legally. So having a prescription to hand or some way of demonstrating that this is my legitimate prescription, that's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. This might be good. The ICE standard, emergency standard card app for iPhone. But then, you know, what if you lock your iPhone, as most people do, and should, frankly? And you're passed out. They can't get into your iPhone. I just think let's keep it simple. Let's not make it too high tech. But for Billy, wouldn't be a bad idea to have some way to, on a smartphone, which seems like a good thing, where he could just say, flash it, say, look, see, here's my prescription. I don't know what the TSA requires. This would be a good call to the TSA. Because they, you know, when you carry prescription meds through the airport security, don't you need to have some demonstration that it's yours? Interesting question. 8888, ask Leo. Milnock says in the chat room, oh, by the way, one other card you might want to have in a U.S. hospital, a credit card. Yeah, good point. Eric in Gaithersburg, Maryland. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have, I use SugarSync, which I love.
Yep, great product.
Yes. I have two offices, two different locations with desktops at each location that I run my business from.
Okay.
And I have a specialized program that uses, saves it to a Microsoft Access database.
Okay.
And I seem to be running into problems where every time it goes up to SugarSync and it goes down to the other computer,
yeah,
it keeps renaming with like a longer name.
It does
name.
That because there's conflicts and it can't be. This is always a problem with multi-user databases. If you change, the problem is if they don't match, SugarSync doesn't know what to save. So what it does, and Dropbox does this, a lot of solutions do this, is it renames it, you know. And Dropbox will say conflict. Put in parentheses, conflict, and you'll have 20 of these things.
Yeah,
and
so
what's the most up to date?
And I'm trying to work around that. So I'm thinking about taking and using a either a USB 3.0 hard drive, a USB 64 gig stick, or
well,
a
you e- never. So it's never the case that two people are operating on the database at the same time. It's just you.
Never the case. It's just me.
Okay, that's nice because. You know, there's multi-user where two people might be working on the database simultaneously, and that requires software that's multi-user aware and will lock it, record, will make sure that it keeps track of it. But if it's just that the database is changed on this machine, and then you go to your other office and you change it on that machine, if there were some way that these could be synced together in between those times, problem is SugarSync doesn't know, right? Oh, he went to the other office. It has no idea. So, there's a couple of ways to do this. You could absolutely carry the database with you back and forth. You'd have one copy on a USB key. and work on that copy. And you can do that. Access will, you could tell Access, here, here's where the database is, and it could work on that copy. There's a risk with that because, of course, data corruption or losing the USB key is going to cause a problem. You might also look at, I would guess, although I'm not sure, and maybe the chat room could tell you, Microsoft is moving to, of course, the cloud like everybody else with SkyDrive and Office 365. And I would guess that Microsoft has a way to use Access with SkyDrive that avoids this whole problem, that you're working. In other words, that Access is working in the cloud, so you don't have to carry it around. How big is the is it giant, the database?
No, no. It's probably, let's say, no bigger than 20 gigs.
Well, that's pretty big, but certainly not something you'd want to upload on a regular basis. In fact, copying that to a USB key would be kind of slow. SkyDrive, let me see if Access or Office 365.
I do have another option, and I didn't even ever do it. The program also has, it could use SQL Server, but I didn't. That's for networks, but I never really needed a network. But maybe I do.
Let me ask the chat room if they have experience with using Access, the database, on SkyDrive. Because that would be what you'd want to do. It's pretty, 20 gigs is good. You probably want to compact that if you can. That's a good size. That's not a tiny database.
Okay. Well, I think I should take that back. The database, the specific database, is significantly smaller. However, there's lots of files, drawings. It's a construction estimating program. That are associated with that, I probably would keep all the drawings and everything else that's associated with.
Yeah, there you go.
That grows, and that's more, let's say, I wouldn't say static, but the database itself, I think the database itself can get up to, let's say, 20 megabytes, and if you don't, and then you compact it, you know, each one, I have two different databases, so let's say each one could be up to 20 each, so it's 40 megabytes.
So one possible solution, Office 365 does not, I'm just looking, SkyDrive nor Office 365, either one support Access. They want you to go to a SQL Server, basically. Microsoft says, you want a multi-user database, SQL Server, not Access. However, they do support, Office 365 supports forms in SkyDrive. So you could use that for data entry and have it right to your Access. This is a little tricky. This is a little tricky because Access really isn't designed to be multi-user. Microsoft intentionally doesn't put that in because they really want you to buy SQL Server. So Access is going to very easily get confused. And that's, by the way, why SugarSync is doing the right thing. It's saying, I'm not going to copy this. I'm going to make another copy because I don't know what you're doing.
So let's just go back. Let's say if I do, what I guess the question is USB 3.0 versus a USB stick.
Well, USB 3 is very much faster. And if you're going to copy that whole thing, you really want USB 3. That's big.
And the question is, how does that perform? Like eSATA, I'm reading.
eSATA is the fastest because it's right on the bus. USB 3 is pretty good. We're talking on a USB 3 system, obviously. You know, you have to. Your computer has to support it as well as the drive.
Yeah, I can buy a PCI card for each of my computers.
On a USB 3 system with a USB 3 drive, I was using. Let me just check my benchmarks. I think you're getting 200 megabytes a second write time. So that's pretty fast, but it's going to take a while to copy 20 gigs. You're definitely going to want to separate out the databases because you don't want to copy that whole database each time.
And what about the performance of that? What would be the sacrifice of keeping like all of that on one hard drive versus breaking it up into, you know, letting SugarSync do this more of the static part of it and just the database itself, the keeping that on the stick? What, from a performance standpoint, though, am I going to notice the downgrade in performance versus working directly off the hard drive?
No, I think when you're working with it, it won't be too bad. It's the copying it over, if you have to do that, that's going to be a pain in the butt. I was getting read speeds, much faster read speeds, on a Kingston HyperX, which is a USB 3 drive of 236 megs per second. That's pretty good. That's fast enough to work with. Leo Lepore, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking computers and the internet. cell phones, home theater, our digital photography expert, Chris Marquardt, coming up at 33 after the hour to talk about digital photography, I guess. We've been talking databases. We had a call last hour, a couple of interesting calls last hour that I'm still kind of mulling over. Our caller that ended the hour was looking for a way to use his Access database on two different computer systems, geographically separated. He's the only user. The problem is he wants that database to synchronize. You know, it's a large database. I'm surprised he says he's been using SugarSync. I don't think that that's even possible. With 20 gigabytes, the time it would take to upload and then download 20 gigabytes would be days, wouldn't it? It seems unlikely that that's syncing the whole thing anyway. But that's kind of the issue, isn't it? That SugarSync says, I don't know, this database has been changed from the one over here. I'm just not going to copy it over because I don't know which changes you want to keep. Couple of people suggesting go to my PC that you do use remote access and only use, when you're doing that database, one computer and you just remote access it from the other computer. That would certainly solve the problem. And you can update access to be multi-user, but there are other database systems that are that support multi-user. Here's one Dr. Mom in the chat room suggested, Macon Systems, M-A-C-O-N-S-Y-S. Advanced DB Master, it's a multiple user database system. Access can be, with some effort and a server made multi-user. It isn't specifically not multi-user, but multi-user databases are tricky because the issue is you have multiple people changing it at the same time and so forth. Rentaro in the chat room says, just get a laptop. Bring it back and forth. That'd be easier. Our caller really wanted to know, well, how fast is an external drive or a USB drive? Would it be fast enough to keep the database on it and just bring it back and forth? And yeah, indeed, you could do that. And if you're using eSATA or USB 3 or FireWire or Thunderbolt, one of the fast interfaces, it'd certainly be fast enough to do the databasing, update it, and so forth. You know, hundreds in all of those four cases, we're talking hundreds of megabytes a second. I doubt very much any given record is that big. Easy. Web 6145 in the chat room says SQL Server Express from Microsoft is free and would work with your Access interface. So there are ways to do it. It sounds like the best thing to do is get a database expert to set this up for you. This is a very common but much more complicated use for computers that requires a little bit of expertise. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Eric in Gaithersburg. That was Eric in Gaithersburg. Let's go to Richard in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Hey, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
I have a couple of questions. Interesting questions. I was on the phone with my daughter the other day, and we were talking about she's really unhappy with the i5.
Really? What is she unhappy with?
I guess there wasn't much change, I guess, from she had the 4S, and she said there's not a lot of change, there's nothing really spectacular about it, she likes the way it looks.
There's two things that really are significant. The biggest one is, and it's only if you're in an area where you can get LTE, but if you're on a Verizon or AT&T LTE area, that speed on the internet data is so much faster that's a significant improvement. And this is the first iPhone to support LTE. Mm. Maybe she doesn't care about that.
I don't know. She just wasn't overly impressed with it. I said, well, maybe you could have kept your 4S.
Yeah. Well, and that's been my recommendation, by the way, when it came out, is I said, don't, if you're still under contract and you have a 4S, don't feel like you have to upgrade. If you have a 4... or earlier, you might want to upgrade. The other feature, of course, it's got one icon row higher. It's not a huge screen. It's a slightly bigger screen. It is, in some ways, more fragile. I've nicked the heck out of mine. I have a feeling in a 6 months usage, it's going to look pretty beat up. So you definitely want, despite the beautiful design, you definitely want a case for it.
Yeah, I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking about the case. And yeah. But then again, you know, it's like you said, you know, if you got a case, well, you know.
Why? Well, who cares about the beautiful design? The other disadvantage is this, you know, it's a good thing. I understand why Apple did it, but the new 9-pin cable makes it incompatible with everything we have up to now. None of our old cables will work. And, you know, I literally had to buy $200 worth of cables so that I'd have the cable, you know, at home, car, work, and then the converters for the devices that I have 30-pin connectors. By the time I was done, I spent another couple of $100 on cables. And that's
terrible.
It's incredibly frustrating to me. Apple really needs to reconsider whether it wants to gouge its customers like that. If you're going to make the change, and I understand why they had to, this is a much more modern connector. Subsidize the cables, because we've got, you know, we've all got, you know, don't make a profit on them, okay?
Exactly. Here's the question, a couple of questions, actually. The number one question is, she was concerned as to, she's thinking about changing over to the Galaxy Note. I'm thinking about buying my wife that phone. Now
it's huge.
That's what I've heard. Now, I am totally blind, so I'm sure the accessibility is equivalent to, as far as the iPhone is concerned, Siri, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, it has speech recognition. The Google speech recognition is quite good. I'm able to dictate much more reliably on an Android device than I am on an iPhone. It is not as good as Siri in some regards, better in other regards. And the problem with the Samsung devices is that the preferred voice recognition is something Samsung put on there. It's from Vlingo. I think Google's is better, so you will want to change that. iPhone is spectacular for accessibility. I think Apple does a really good job on accessibility. And it's to be commended there. I'm not blind, so I don't know if Android is as good. I'd have to defer to blind users to tell me that. I know they have most of the same kinds of features. I just haven't used it enough.
Well, I'm about to find out, so I'll look into
it. Would you let me know then? Call me. Yeah, sure. Let us know, because that's something I should know. How is it for accessibility? You know, I think that both companies, all companies now, are paying attention to that, finally.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
So the question lies in this. As far as, like, transferring her contacts, her notes, photos from the iPhone to the Galaxy Note, is that really going to be possible?
Yeah, it's easy. So a couple of things. Yeah, there's a couple of things to do. First of all, you should be, and I'm sure she is, but if not, she should set this up, be using Google Calendar contacts for synchronizing. Because then when you get the new Android phone, it'll just suck up right up from your Google account. So if she doesn't yet have a Gmail account, create one and set it up so that her phone, her iPhone synchronizes to Google.
Okay.
That simplifies everything. And in fact, for all new phones, iPhone, Android, even Windows phone, having that stuff on Google, contacts, calendar, on Google makes it so much easier. She never has to enter phone numbers again. It just sucks it right up. In fact, Samsung's, actually, I think iPhones do this too, will now also take phone numbers and pictures and so forth from Facebook. So synchronizing it up with a Facebook account will give her the rest of the contacts. Then, in terms of pictures, there's several ways to do this. Of course, she can always synchronize, dock her phone with a computer and copy the photos over. If she puts them on Picasa Web, for instance, they will then automatically show up in a gallery on the Android phone.
Okay.
But she could also use Dropbox. I do this. Dropbox now synchronizes photos to both Android and iOS. So if she's got fewer than 2 gigabytes of photos, she can get a free Dropbox account and set it up so that it's copying photos from each phone. And then now she's got a centralized repository that all her photos are on. So there's another way to do that. This is all pretty easy to do now, Richard. I don't think she's going to have too much trouble making that transition. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again.
Very jazzy.
Scrambled eggs all over my face.
Mm-hmm.
What is a boy to do?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8880. Is that song called Frasier? Is that why you played that? 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, Chris Marquardt, our photographic Mythbuster, will be joining us in 13 minutes. Now, he last week debunked the purple flare complaint that people were making about their iPhone 5. it's normal, basically. Lens flare is inevitable with all glass lenses. It's just what happens, and the purple probably comes from either a reflection inside the case or the color of the sapphire protector or something like that. Although I have to say I was able to duplicate that in a 4S, so it definitely happens. It definitely happens. To all in some form or fashion, all cameras. But he has another photographic myth he will debunk on the show later today. Interesting. Meanwhile, back to the phones we go to Hawaii. Eric on the line. Hi, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing?
I'm well, Eric. How are you?
All right.
What can I do for you?
Well, I'm going to be going down to Asia, and I'm just curious, what should I do with my Verizon phone plan, data plan, before I go? Don't plan on using the phone except for emergency.
You may not be able to use it at all. Do you have a world phone?
No, actually, I've got the iPhone 4, and I want to upgrade it to like the Note 2 if it comes out in time.
Well, here's the issue. Verizon uses a technology called CDMA. Depends where in Asia you are. I believe there are CDMA carriers in Japan. But not all over the world. Most of the world is GSM, which is a technology that is incompatible with CDMA. So unless you have a special Verizon phone, some Verizon phones have GSM and CDMA. They have both frequencies, but not all of them. For instance, if you did upgrade to the iPhone 5, no problem on Verizon. Well, I just dropped it again. Now I'll have another nick. The iPhone 5 on Verizon is both GSM and CDMA. In fact, it may be the best world phone ever, because Verizon neglected to lock the SIM card on it, which means you could get somewhere and buy a local SIM card, use local phone and local data, save yourself a lot of money, and just pop it into your Verizon phone. So if you don't have a Verizon World phone, and you don't because you have an iPhone 4, the plan is not going to be the issue. You're not going to be able to use the phone in most areas.
Okay. What about if I was to be lucky enough to get a Note 2?
The Note is a different matter. Well, not on Verizon. I don't know if the Verizon Note will have GSM either. You need a world phone. Now, I have the Note 2 in my hot little hands and love it, but it's a massive phone. The one I have is GSM. It's not on Verizon, though. It's on AT&T. And it doesn't support LTE because it's the international version. That's another matter. LTE is different in the rest of the world than it is in the U.S. So we are kind of an incompatible country. You need to talk to Verizon and tell them what countries you're going to, and they can tell you which phones will support which frequencies in which countries. By the way, yes, you could. Uncle Bick in the chat room said, could you use an AT&T SIM in your Verizon iPhone 5? Yes, as a matter of fact, you could. So you could. Now, you can't have it on both Verizon and AT&T. Pick one. But I think that, if you wanted to travel, you got to talk to Verizon and say, which phones will allow me to go overseas? And you have to tell them which countries. Because, as I said, I think Japan does have CDMA. But again, it may be different frequencies. So you have to there's two things it has to do. It has to support the technology for voice and data in that country, and it has to support the frequencies that that country uses for that voice and data. And that's why it is country specific. And you got to get somebody at Verizon who understands international issues. I am going to use, one thing that I'm really happy about with this iPhone 5 is that it will travel well. I can because of the unlocked GSM SIM. That's kind of nice. That's kind of impressive. But on the other hand, most of the time when I'm in the States, I'll be using the Galaxy Note 2. And because the Note 2 that I purchased is a European unlocked version, I can also take it to Europe or Asia and put a local SIM in, or pay AT&T a little extra for their international data plan. Verizon does the same thing. The issue, though, is not going to be the data plan. It's going to be compatibility. All right, Neil, 7 years old. Now, I don't know. I haven't figured it out, but I think computer years, unlike dog years, computer years are about 10 to 15 years. So your computer is elderly. Is it having problems? Neil?
Hello?
Hi, Neil. Welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a laptop, compact computer. I think it's 6 or 7 years old. I don't have recovery discs. I wouldn't know how to use them anyway. I'm not sure if I would know. And I guess it's just so slow. I guess I have to do a system restore.
Well, or get a new computer. That's pretty old. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll help you right after this. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. Sorry to be Stamps.com. I love Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you print U.S. postage right from your computer and printer. Just imagine, no more trips to the post office. Stamps.com, you even get a USB scale. I'll tell you how to get that in a minute. So you, when you've got a letter to mail, you plop it on the scale. Stamps.com prints out the postage, or it'll print right on the envelope, too. That's cool. Load the envelopes in. In fact, for things like if you're going to, you know, print invoices or send out mass mailings, you put the envelopes in. Prints, it'll take the address from QuickBooks or eBay, Amazon, Etsy, and it just print them right on there. Throwboy uses, what does he use? PayPal. He uses Stamps.com. He uses PayPal. It takes the addresses right from there, and it'll print your logo with the stamp on there, print the address, print the return address. If you're mailing packages, you plop the package on the scale, prints out the mailing label. If you're doing internationally mailing, it'll fill out all the forms. I mean, this the idea of Stamps.com is if you do a lot of mailing, you will save money and be more effective, get more done, and you'll never have to go to the post office. I mean, never. The mail carrier comes to you, or you can even schedule free pickups. Stamps.com is awesome. Now, here's the deal. If you go to Stamps.com right now, there's an $80 trial offer on there. No risk trial offer. Now, that's good. That's a good start. But don't settle. I can give you better. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner there, and that $80 offer will turn into $110 value. $55 in free postage to use over a period of months. You get the digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling for that. It's about $5. To make that up, they give you a $5 supply kit and a 4-week trial of Stamps.com. You got nothing to lose here. In fact, you can cancel at any time, pay nothing, and keep the scale. Stamps.com. We got two accounts here at the Brick House. We use it so often. Never go to the post office again. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use my offer code TECHGUY, two words, T-E-C-H, space G-U-Y. You will love it. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. What do you call him yourself? The Mythbuster is here. The Mythbuster is here. Wait a minute, Chris. I don't hear you. You got your microphone on there? Uh-oh. I don't hear Mr. Marquardt. Oh. he looks so chagrined. He's making faces at me, but I can see him, but I can't hear him because we use.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay, I'm so very sorry.
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. So Chris last week busted a myth by explaining the purple. And by the way, I have a purple flare behind me, just in your honor today. The purple flare on the iPhone 5. Now you're going to bust another myth, the macro myth.
Well, there are so many photographic myths. I just thought I'd make this into a little series and bring one up here every now and then.
I think that's great, yeah.
There's this other myth that people keep telling you, you need to buy an expensive macro lens to do macro photography, you know?
Wait, first explain what macro photography is.
Exactly. Macro pretty much means you're taking pictures of small things and make them look really big. So insects like bugs or electronics or anything that's small that you want to show big in a picture without having to use a microscope.
It's a close-up.
It's a close-up, yeah, pretty much.
And sometimes they say with macro it's one-to-one so that the picture of the insect is exactly the same size as the insect would be if you were holding it in your hand.
Exactly, and that's where real macro starts, and then right. There's 2-to-1 and 3-to-1 and so on. So right. At one point you end up pretty much having a microscope, but somewhere in between there with what your regular lenses can do in a microscope, that's the macro range. And typically those lenses have a closest focus distance, so you can't get any closer than, let's say, I don't know, 10 inches, 15 inches, 20 inches, depending on the lens.
Yeah.
And those macro lenses will let you get just an inch or less from the subject, very, very close. And there are actually more than just one way to get a macro, and most of them are actually quite cost-effective. First, extension tubes. You know, like a big 4x5 camera has bellows.
Yeah.
If you get an extension tube, which is pretty much a tube that you put between the camera and the lens, it's just a little extension that takes the lens a slight little bit away from the camera. That will all of a sudden allow you to get much closer with that lens and use it as a macro lens. So you can use your, I don't know, your 50 millimeter or your 18 to 55 on a DSLR. Put this little extension tube in it. They're fairly cheap. And you can get really close and get macro pictures. So that's one way to do it.
That's less expensive than buying a macro lens.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Macro lenses are hundreds of dollars. An extension tube might be $20, you know. Second is a close-up lens. Pretty much same as a magnifying glass or like reading glasses. Goes on the front of the lens. It's like a like on the filter thread where you would put in your polarizer filter and stuff. You pretty much put that on there, and that will allow you to get closer and to get bigger things in front of the camera, much, much bigger. So that's the second way. It's a bit more expensive than an extension tube, but it does the trick, and most of those work really, really well. And then there's a third one, and that is a really interesting one. Have you ever heard of reversing a lens?
No. It would fall off. It doesn't have a mount on the other side.
Which is true, but then there's something you can buy. It's called a reversal ring, which is a way to let you put that lens either in front of an existing lens. So you have a lens on your camera, you take a second lens and put that on the front of that lens reversed, and that will change the optical properties of that lens. It will allow you to get a close-up.
How interesting.
Or you take a 50 millimeter lens and put that on the camera, again with a special reversal ring, and it points the other way. So you look through the front of the lens and out of the back of the lens.
Is it like looking through binoculars backwards?
Sort of. And this way, all of a sudden, you can go really, really close, and those pictures look really well. If you want to do macro in a pinch, try that. And I've even done it by just holding, by taking the lens off, turning it around, holding it in front of the camera. You got to be careful not to scratch that front part of your lens. But you give that a try. You'd be surprised how close all of a sudden you can get. And take a picture of a penny or something, and you'll be surprised how big you can get those all of a sudden.
I got to try that. Now, this is, of course, for SLRs or cameras that the lens is removable, interchangeable lens cameras, micro four thirds or SLRs. The good news is if you have a point and shoot, most point and shoots have a macro mode, right?
They have a macro mode where they change something in the lens. But even for point and shoots, you might be able to get a close-up lens as a magnifying glass or give it a try with a regular magnifying glass and use. You might even get good results this way.
Macro photography is a lot of fun for flowers. Insects are a little hard because they move. A dead insect would work. Actually, I know a photographer who's quite famous for her macro photography of insects. And she actually raises insects. She has a whole little zoo of insects. But some of her best pictures are, in fact, of non-living insects, because they do tend to move.
It's hard to tell with insects if they're dead or alive.
You know, they look pretty much the same either way.
Exactly.
And they're a lot more, I prefer them myself, I prefer them dead. Not squished, just passed on. Chris Marquardt is really a great photographer. He does a podcast called Tips from the Top Floor, which is all about photographic subjects. You can also, he does workshops. You can find out more about him at his website, chrismarquardt.com. Or TFTTF.com, that's Tips from the Top Floor, or Discover the Top Floor, that's where his workshops are. He resides, in fact, I could tell you're in your studio in Tübingen, Germany.
At this point, I'm in Tübingen, and normally now I'm more up in Hanover.
Right. He gets around.
Yeah, I do.
And don't go there for Oktoberfest, because it's over.
It's over.
It ends in September. I've got to get the word out. There's got to be lots of people go to Bavaria. They go to Munich October 15th, and they say, where's October? Oh, it's been over for weeks.
Over. Next year. Give it a try next year. I've never been there.
All right. Next year, you, me, Oktoberfest.
Okay, good.
ChrisMarquardt.com. And next week, more myth-busting. By the way, we do have an assignment going on right now. The assignments are not a competition. There are no prizes. It's just an excuse to go out and take more pictures. We're asking you to go take a picture that illustrates in some way the word face. And we're getting some great submissions here. Now, here's how you submit. Take the picture, upload it to Flickr, which is a free site. If you're a Yahoo member, you already have a Flickr account. And it's Flickr.com. And then there's a group on Flickr.com. Just search for the Tech Guy group, and you'll see it there. And there's thousands of members, thousands of pictures. And just upload it. Make sure you tag it with the word face so we know that that's your submission. I think maybe next week we could look at them. Are we ready?
Yes, we're ready to look at it next week and then do another photo myth the week after next week.
I love it. Mr. Mythbuster, Chris Marquardt. Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
Take care. ChrisMarquardt.com for more information. 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to talk to me, the tech guy. Photography is a great hobby. It's one of many of my hobbies, and I can answer photographic questions. Not as well as Chris, but we can talk about that. Or anything else with a chip in it. But have Dale in Florida next. Been hanging on the line a little bit. Hi, Dale. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I like photography, too. I do all that macro stuff and things like that. But
I love, you know why I do it? Because I'm so, normally because of the radio thing, so auditory. It's all about the hearing that I thought it'd be good to do something with the eyes, something visual.
Sure.
Just to mix it up.
Right. My question today is a little background. I'm a Windows user for, I don't know, 20-plus years. Although this year I bought a Mac, that one with a 27-inch screen, just to do process pictures and do iMovie. I also have a 4S and an iPad. Well, about a month ago, I decided I'm going to link all this stuff via the cloud. Okay?
All right. That will stop there and continue on after the break. How about that?
Okay.
The cloud. When we continue, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I apologize. In all of the excitement with Chris Marquardt, I forgot to answer the question about the fellow with the old, really, really old laptop who says, hey, it's slow now. Now, on the one hand, if a laptop's 7 years old, I would say dog years are what? 7 to 1, right? For every human year that goes by, a dog ages 7 years. So a 15-year-old dog is 105 years old. Laptops, it's more like 15 to 1. So a 7-year-old laptop is 105 years old. It's on its last legs, and you're surprised that it's slow. Of course it's slow. Now, if you put the recovery discs on it, it would be exactly as it was from the factory, which isn't that slow. The problem is that over time, we want to do new things. We want to update Windows, for instance. We want to use Internet Explorer 8 instead of Internet Explorer 3. We want to browse the web, and the web has gotten much deeper, richer, more elaborate. So there's the problem is if you were only doing things you did in 2005, the computer would be exactly as fast as it was in 2005. But you're not. You're doing 2012 things. And time has left you in the dust. So it is certainly the case that you could make that computer faster. And if you don't have the recovery discs, most computers either come with discs or, and this has become more and more common, ask you to make discs when you first boot them up. If you didn't do that, if you have them, it's easy to install them, to run them. You put the disk in, you run it, it'll reboot the computer, you tell it to wipe the drive, you know, make sure you back up your data before you use these because they tend to wipe out everything. So back up whatever you need. You can't back up apps very well, but you can easily back up, you know, your documents, put them on some, keep them. You should have a backup anyway, right? And then format the drive, reinstall Windows. Now, very important, if you do run those recovery disks, remember, that's a 7-year-old version of Windows. It's pretty much out of date. But before you go on with it, you certainly want to update it as much as you can So you'll go to Windows Update immediately, as soon as you get it online, before you do anything else. Because if you don't do this, you're just an open book to hackers. You're unpatched. So very important to install Windows, get the internet working, then immediately, don't go to any other website, go to windowsupdate.com and run it and run it and run it till there are no more critical updates. You'll probably be getting service packs. You'll probably be some massive downloads. You'll probably have to reboot it a few times. But you've got to get it as up-to-date as you can. Now, it's Windows XP. You're not going to be able to get it, make it modern. You'll be able to. The good news is XP is so well-known, so heavily patched, that it's probably going to be pretty secure by the time you're done. Not out of the box by the time you're done. Now, a whole day or two have gone by in this process. Now you can install apps that you need. If you've got the original application disks, use those. But often you want to get up-to-date versions of the apps as well. So you might go online to get those. Then you can restore your data. Now, the computer will operate as well as it did in 2005. No better. Microsoft is starting to abandon XP, so don't expect a lot more improvements. But truthfully, don't expect it to be a modern computer. It's not. If you don't have your recovery disks, you can usually go, this was a compact computer, you can go to HP and ask for them. They'll probably send them to you for a nominal fee. You can also put Linux on there, which isn't a bad choice for a computer of that age. There are a number of Linuxes like Shubuntu or Xubuntu, xubuntu.org, where it's designed for older computers, and it's more secure, frankly, than Windows. It's kept up to date, and you can then surf and get email and do some of the basic stuff you would do free. So if you can't get the recovery disk, you don't want to pay for it, try Linux. It's free. xubuntu.org is a special one for older systems. The good news is Windows 8 is coming out in, October 26th, in 12 days. That's the latest, greatest version of Windows, and there are lots of new Windows 8 machines available. You'd probably benefit by getting a new computer if you can afford it. If you don't want to spend money at all and you don't have your recovery disks, put Linux on there. But don't expect, and it really is a mistake, don't expect that a computer that's 7 years old is going to perform like a brand new one. It isn't. Dale in Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dale. So you said you want to go to the cloud. What do you mean? What do you want to do?
Again, mainly I use my Windows machine, okay, although I have three other devices that are Apple. And I followed their directions, and I tried to sync everything via the cloud. Well, what I ended up with was my Mac was synced, and my other two Apple devices were. But the cloud shredded the address book on my Windows machine.
Well, now, whose cloud? Microsoft SkyDrive? iCloud from Apple? Whose cloud?
Apple.
Apple's iCloud.
Yes, iCloud.
Yeah. So it's,
it literally shredded my address book in Outlook.
Yeah, unusual. Not unusual. Syncing can, especially syncing multiple machines, can cause all sorts of problems. In fact, the first time you're going to sync, you're going to do this kind of thing, back up, if you've got your address book just so, back it up so that if this happens, you can restore it. I take it you did not do that.
No, I did not do that. And after frustrating 2 weeks of trying to fix it myself, I called Apple. And
how did that go?
10 plus hours.
Oh, my.
At least five different people at the top level of Apple's help and got nowhere. The only thing they were successful in doing was shutting the cloud down for me so it doesn't continue to rip up my address book. And I had one address book that said Outlook address book. And I had all of my address, all of my contacts in there, all of my groups in there. And after I got done syncing with Apple, I had six different address books, and they were fragmented to a point I never did understand.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, iCloud is designed for Apple, not for Windows. You can do
it. Well, they're the ones that said, they sent me an email, said, hey, get on the cloud with your Windows machine right now. We can handle it.
Yeah, they have an iCloud control panel for Windows. I've never tried it, and the whole idea makes me queasy. I mean, why would Apple want to support Windows in any way?
Well, that was the name of the game. You know, that they I didn't go to them. They sent me an email to try to get, you know, to get me to do that.
You paid for it, too, right?
Say again?
Did you pay for it?
No, I didn't pay for anything. Oh, yeah. Gosh, no. Ah. I wouldn't have paid for it. And, you know, I mean, I'm a senior. I'm 70-plus years old, and I do a lot of emailing between my church and a museum I operate down here and stuff like that.
Well, the issue is, if you were just using one computer, you probably wouldn't have had this problem. But because you have several computers going to iCloud, right?
Well, no. Yes. They wanted me to link all my devices.
Right. By doing that, often this can cause issues because this is similar to the guy who had the online database that was making multiple copies. When you're synchronizing two different address books, you've got to be careful. And so what ends up happening is you tend to get lots of duplicates.
Well, I didn't. The thing is I've only ever created one address book, and it was in Outlook.
No, but you have how many computers syncing to the iCloud?
But
those is a separate address book, so you have at least two or three. That's why you have multiple address books. I'm not apologizing for Apple, but this is the problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you want to get the Galaxy Note? What do you think? You like it? It's big. It's oh, Robert's going, whoa, that boy has a big phone. So I know there are more than a few of you going, hey, I'd like to. Hey, big boy. Hey, I like that. That thing is, go ahead, you can play with it. Here, I'll unlock it for you. So while Robert plays with my phone, let me tell you how you can get the new gadget and pay for it with Gazelle. Gazelle is where I send my old gadgets, right? Gazelle buys them from me, which I like. They're oohing and aahing. And then I've got money for a new phone. So let's say that you got that iPhone 4 and you're ready to upgrade to the iPhone 5. Just go to gazelle.com and get an offer. And these offers are good for, that's for the 8 gigabyte. Let's see if we got a bigger one, $86. These offers are good for 30 days. So you're not even making a commitment at this point. You're just saying, hey, well, what would you give me? If you got the 32 gigabyte version, $159 of an iPhone 4, that's almost all the way to an iPhone 5. If you got an iPhone 4S, even better. Let's say this is my AT&T 32 gig iPhone 4S, $205. Now, here's the deal: you pop it in the box, and you know, as long as you got a box going, throw in some other stuff. You got an old iPad, an iPod, old MacBook or Mac screen or Mac Mini, or maybe you've got an HTC or a BlackBerry or a Samsung. You know, I could get rid of that Galaxy S3 now, right? It's a factory-unlocked Galaxy S3. How much is that worth? Good condition. Yeah, it's got a few little dings, but it's pretty good condition. Free of water damage, you bet. $256. Now, throw that all in the box. Anything worth more than a buck, Gazelle pays the postage. Their data experts remove the data. You don't have to worry about that. And then they send you a check, a PayPal credit, or, and this is my pro tip, an Amazon gift card. You'll get 5% more on the Amazon gift card because I think they're rebating the affiliate fee to you. Isn't that a good thing? Great way to get your gadgets. Get that old stuff out of your house so you can get some nice new stuff. GAZELLE.com. If you're trying to figure out how could I get that iPhone 5, oh, I bet there's enough in here in your closet or your gadget drawer to get one. Easy. Just go to Gazelle. 30 days on the quote, so you have plenty of time to decide what you want to do. Just find out what it's worth right now. Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy here, and it's time to talk computers and the internet and digital photography and home theater and, of course, cell phones. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. You want to talk about it, I'm here to do that. Just ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. We were talking about iCloud and how it shredded our last caller's data. And this is, well, first of all, it's not unusual when you do online synchronization for this to happen. I can't tell you how many times I've had duplicate entries. And I mean, it's just a nightmare. I got so much to the point where I really am. Before I will use any new service, absolutely will back it up. If I got the address book looking good, make a copy of it. And every program allows you to do this pretty easily. So keep this in mind before you you know, say, yeah, I'm going to try iCloud. Synchronizing is a is inexact. It's problematic, especially when you synchronize multiple address books in different formats, which our caller was doing. He had two on a Mac, probably in Apple's address book format, and one on a Windows machine in Outlook. What a surprise. It made a mess of it. It made a hash of it. I could have predicted that. So what is the, you know, what is the best way to do this? Well, one thing, besides making a copy of your data, so if this does happen, you can get back to it. I don't like iCloud. I think if you're using a Macintosh and iOS devices, iCloud is a good choice. It does a good job with that. Although Apple has never been very good at online services, MobileMe was a disaster. iCloud is not much better. So I don't generally recommend it. But if you're just using Macs and iOS, it should work fine. And there are reasons to use it. iOS, for instance, handles iCloud kind of transparently and automatically. But here's the good news. There is, in my opinion, a synchronization service that works great, that's reliable, that doesn't cause the problems that I've had with the previous solutions, and it works with all portable devices, all desktop devices. It's Google. And I've recommended this time and time again. It really is a great solution. If you use Gmail, you already have Google Contacts. That's part of Gmail. You can add a Google Calendar, calendar.google.com. Synchronize it with everything. The only issue is sometimes Outlook is not a good, you know, Outlook doesn't play well with others. I'll be honest with you. If you have Outlook and you're not using the paid Google apps, you'll have to go out and get a third party app to do the synchronization or export everything from Outlook and stop using it. I'm not a fan of Outlook either for that matter. Outlook is just, it's its own world. And when you're in Outlook's world, come to think of it, all the synchronization problems I had were because I was using Outlook. I do like, well, now that I've got everything in Google Docs, Google Contacts, when I get a new phone, I just log into my Google account, iPhone or Android phone, and there's everything. And that's nice. And when I update something, it updates it on the web, and then everything else is synced up to it. I use a program on the Mac. I could use Apple's calendar program, but I use a program on the Mac called BusyMac that works great. Very happy for that. But I have to say, I mean, I have no answer for you. It's part of the nature of living in the cloud. And remember, when you get a free service, you can't expect much support. we're getting a little spoiled, I think. We all have, you know, Facebook's free, Google's free, iCloud is free unless you want more storage. But if something goes wrong and you haven't paid for anything, don't be surprised when nobody picks up the phone when you call. It's hard enough getting good service from people we pay through the nose for. I told you about my issues with Comcast yesterday. They get a lot of money out of me, and I still get terrible support. Well, how could you expect better from a free service? There's no money in it for them. So good luck getting support from Google or Facebook or Apple iCloud. Dave in Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. I've been dealing with a problem for, I guess, a couple months now, and it's just plaguing me, and I don't know how to resolve it. Maybe you can help.
Okay.
I have a Windows 7 64-bit operating system. And I'm caught in this constant loop of trying to reinstall updates.
Yeah. Your updates are stuck.
Stuck.
Yeah.
It says each time failure configuring Windows updates, reverting changes, and then it shuts down. And then
it says, hey, you need an update.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't seem to want to install them.
This happens so much that Microsoft has a fix for it. They have one of those, you know, kind of you click it instant fix things for it.
I've tried it. It may be the same one. It's the it's the hot fix. I think it's the Microsoft readiness tool or something like that. It's an update and it's a hot fix. And well, I've installed that. And,
before you do that. I want you to visit Microsoft's, let me see if I can find this. Somebody gave it to me yesterday, actually. There's a, if you go to support.microsoft.com, and there's a registry fix that basically clears out the updates. What happens is, if an update doesn't finish, Microsoft can't go on and continue. And so Windows can't go on and continue. So they have... I'm on a Macintosh that says, we're sorry, we can't help you. Well, that's right. But if you fix problem with Windows Update, there is a one of these little Microsoft Fix-It buttons that is really just a registry fix. And it will clear the registry entries for the existing updates. It will restart you all at once. And it just deletes the corrupted download and starts over. And that's, yeah, that's probably all you need.
Is it that simple?
Yeah. Okay. Because what happened is you ran an update and it didn't finish. And now, it for good reason, it's in an unknown state. It won't go do more updates, but it can't finish the old update. It's locked or it's corrupted. So what you need to do is, and you could do this by hand, but it's much easier to use a Microsoft support tool.
Oh, I wouldn't want to deal with the registry.
No. So what it does is just deletes it and starts over. And you might have to do a few updates that you've already done, but it should unstick it. It's such a common problem.
And just go to Microsoft support.
Yeah, let me see if I can get a link to the support article.
Mm-hmm.
The chat room had it yesterday, and I just don't have it to hand. But I'll find it, and I'll put it in the show notes. How about that?
Okay.
It's a very simple registry thing. This is, I have to say, praise to Microsoft for putting their knowledge base online. Everybody does it now. Microsoft was the first. So you could just search through all the information that Microsoft knows. And then they have these new fixes. It's a support item 971058. So
971058.
Yeah, 058. 971058. How do I reset Windows Update components? And it's an automated troubleshooter that go through it and fix it. And also it has a manual thing, and it has more information there. But this is a good place to start. So it's support.microsoft.com, and then search for 971058.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you very much. I was dreading the idea of reformatting.
I know. And this happens so much, and I get this call a lot. And generally, I think this works.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. Don't know if this will continue with Windows 8, but I would guess it would. If you think about it, on-the-fly updates while an operating system is running are tricky. And it's really not a surprise that occasionally something goes wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, is responsible for everything you hear on this show. He makes his playlist available on his Google Plus account, KYLE/BENHAM, after the show, or go to our show notes at techguylabs.com, and you'll have not only will you have notes from the entire show, questions and answers, video too a little later in the week, but you'll also get... His playlist right there at the end. You still do a Spotify playlist, right, Kyle? So that's worth having a Spotify account just so you can listen back to all these wonderful shows. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see. Did I answer everything that I was supposed to answer before the break? I have such a poor short-term memory. Let's go to Clinton in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hello, Clinton. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Doing well. Yeah. How do I start you? Basically, I'm a field technician,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm a contractor too. And how it works out is that I get an email, and with that email is attached a work order. And basically, what I have to do is that I have to print out this attachment, fill it out, perform the job, fill it out, and have to rescan it in, and then either fax it or send it off.
Horrible. Horrible.
No, it's primitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just trying to figure out what's the best hardware. Well, I'm thinking of getting a tablet, but I want to know what's the best hardware and software to automate this as much as possible.
Are those orders? Do they come in as what format do they come in as?
Usually as a PDF.
PDF. Okay, this is easy then. So what you want is software that will allow you to edit the PDF on the tablet, add text or whatever, and then save it and email it out. On the iPad, there's a great program that'll do this. It's called PDF Pen from Smile Software. And basically what happens is you open the PDFs in your email, you send it to PDF Pen. You can then mark it up, edit it, add text. You can even have your signature in the library. In fact, a variety of things in the library, you know, if you wanted, you can get a stamp that says paid and you can put that on there, and it's in the library, and you just, it's like a stamp, and then you send it back to the email and mail it out. You'd never have to print it or anything.
After I've filled out the work order, I then have to take those same fields that I've put into the work order to generate an invoice. Is there any way to have that also automated as well?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I do know what you mean. What you'd like then is, this is a little bit more elaborate, and probably an iPad would not be the right choice for this, because it sounds like what you need is some custom software that would have a form that would be customized to whatever it is that you're doing. Would ask you, you know, and have fields for all the things you needed to fill out. You'd fill that out. It would then take that data, put it in the PDF, and create an invoice. And that's a little more complicated. That's a little more custom.
Yeah, exactly. Because I notice I can do most of this stuff with apps, right?
Well,
but I want to go from one app to another app to...
Yeah, apps, the way iOS is designed, apps don't talk to each other, right?
Yeah.
Now, there is a program for the iOS that would do this called FileMaker Go. It's a database program, and it lets you develop a custom database app for your iPhone or iPad. And by doing so, then you could create the form that is exactly the form you need. FileMaker is really great at form development. It's a database, but it's a form-based database. So with it, you can create a form that you would fill out, and it would then go to the iPad as a database form. And you probably would end up sending it back to a computer running FileMaker Pro, which would then... do the invoicing and the PDF and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But what you'd have on the iPad is the form you needed.
Right.
Now FileMaker has been around a long time. They're really amazing database solution, and they're generally a desktop database solution, but they have these iOS apps too. So in fact, the front page at FileMaker.com says easily create and manage custom business apps for iPhone and iPad. That's exactly what you want to do.
FileMaker Pro. Okay,
just go to FileMaker.com to read more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I don't know on Android. And Android tablets these days are a lot cheaper. You can get a Nexus 7 for $200, and I'm not sure how you would do that on Android. And probably be easier in some ways. But I'm not sure what the solutions would be. Maybe the chat room will give me some suggestions for that. 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to get in the chat room, you can do that by going to our website, techguylabs.com. And, you know, if you're listening to the show after the fact, you can also add your 2 cents by going to the website, going to Clinton's question. You'll see Clinton's question. You'll see my answer. And then you could comment on it. And I want people to do that, because as people comment and say, well, Leo had one way to do it, but it wasn't the best. There's a better way. Or Leo's crazy. Or I like Leo's suggestion, but what if you tried this? You know, add stuff. And that way, over time, I think we can get this website to really be a rich solution for people who have questions. It's free. I don't charge any money. I'm not going to ever charge any money, or there'll be no subscription fees for this. I just want to make it a resource that people can use. 8888 Ask Leo is the other way to do it. Just call me. Richard in Fullerton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Yeah, I have a question for you. I have a couple of ideas for apps, and I don't know anything about them, and I was wondering if you could point me in the right direction where I can learn how to develop an app.
You want to become a programmer?
Well, if that's what it takes. I don't have any idea what it takes.
Apps are programs, and so somebody who develops apps, who creates apps on iPhone or Android, is a programmer. And so first you'll have to learn programming languages. Then you'll have to learn the specifics of the platform you're using. Both Android and iPhone have libraries and tools that you would use. You'll also have to learn what they call the Application Programmer's Interface, or API. That tells you how to make a window, how to make a menu, what's the standard for opening and closing, things like that. And it's different on iPhone and Android phone. So there's quite a lot to learn how to make apps. It's a great hobby, or if professionally you think that this might be your future, it's certainly a great way to go. Now, generally, when somebody calls with this kind of question, I don't think they're really saying, how do I learn how to program a computer? What they're really saying is, I've got this great idea. It's a $1 million moneymaker. How do I turn it into reality? And you don't actually have to be a programmer. You could hire a programmer. There are many pitfalls there, too. Tell you what, I will give you some websites when we come back where you can find programmers for hire or learn to be a programmer yourself. 8888. Ask Leo. So Richard called from Fullerton. He says, I have a brilliant idea for an app. And I want to, so now let me interpret. Let me read between the lines, because I get this call a lot. Not just a call. People I know in my life all the time say to me, basically what they're saying is, I know an app that would make me $1 million. And they want to know, what's the shortest path from here to $1 million? The problem is, there is no short path from here to $1 million. First of all, the idea is the easiest part. I think people often think that a good idea is like the hard thing, and then the rest of it's easy. No. Ideas are a dime a dozen. It's all about execution. And I'll give you an example. There are two guys, roughly the same time, had ideas for photo sharing apps. One was called PicPlease, PicPlz, and it came out first. And the idea was, on your iPhone or your Android phone, and they came out on both platforms, you take a picture and you can share it to your networks. People can follow you, they can like you, they can make comments on your pictures. I loved PicPlease. It was great, Android and iPhone. Then a little bit later, a guy named Kevin Systrom came up with an idea for something called Instagram. Same thing. You take a picture on your iPhone. It wasn't even available on Android. Take a picture on your iPhone. People can comment on it, like on it. You could share it to your networks. For reasons nobody fully understands, Instagram, bam, took off. In fact, after less than a year in operation, Facebook bought the company for $1 billion. 3 months later, PicPlease went out of business, having made no money. Well, actually, the truth is, Instagram never made any money either until they were sold. So what made PicPlease work and Instagram not work? They both were the same exact idea. So the idea wasn't the key at all. It was sharing pictures with you. In fact, there's another company, Color. Remember Color? Maybe you don't. They got a lot of attention when they came out after Instagram and PicPlease, because they got $41 million in venture capital for an application to share pictures with your friends. They got $41 million probably because of Instagram's success, and venture capitalists are, like everybody else, pack animals. And they said, well, that's working. Well, maybe we'll give this guy money and he'll be a $1 billion company. Color had to change. They've changed again. Now they're a video sharing service. They have nothing to do with what they came out with originally. So the idea did not make it for Color, Instagram, or pick please. It wasn't the idea, it was execution, and in some ineffable way, because if you could bottle this, that would be the key. Instagram did it right, pick please didn't. Color didn't. In fact, the funny thing is both pick please and color were started by entrepreneurs who had had real successes in the past. Instagram was started by a failed company, Bourbon, where they had tried apps and failed. And Instagram was like their third idea, and they'd never made it. It defies logic. I think there is a logic there, because if you looked at Instagram, in fact, I knew this the minute I saw it, there was something about it, the elegance of its design, the way it implemented it, the way it worked for users, that made it special. It did exactly the same thing PicPlease did, filters, everything. But it did it in some intangible way that made it better. Now, was it worth $1 billion? No, not even close. Did Facebook get ripped off? Absolutely. Absolutely. But Kevin Systrom and his buddies are walking away with $1 billion in their pocket. Doesn't really much matter to them whether it was worth it or not. So when you ask me, Richard, I got a great idea. What's the shortest route to making $1 million or $1 billion? I would say, well, there's a lot of twists and turns in that journey. Sure, you can learn to be a programmer. But will your program be the model of elegance and beauty that Instagram was? Probably not, because it'll be your first program. Instagram's programmers had made many programs before then. They'd learned a lot. And they perhaps had something internally, like a taste or a sense of what the public wanted that made it special. It wasn't the idea. It wasn't even probably the programmers. It was probably the design, the user interface. So what do you learn? Well, you got to learn programming. You got to learn user interface. You got to learn what people want. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And many people who have had lots of success have not been able to crack this market. But we all look at the app market and we say, my God, people are getting rich from apps. Oh, my goodness. Look at Angry Birds. Look at... Well, here's another great example, OMG Pop, which is a company that got sold to Zynga for well over $1 billion. What was it? And maybe it was several hundred million, pardon me. A mere $200 million because of their success, not with their first or second or third app, but with I think it was their fifth or sixth app. It was called Draw Something. Remember that? Remember that was so hot, so popular. You draw a picture and then your friend would try to guess what it was an illustration of, and then he would do the same to you. And it was really hot, and Zynga bought it right when it was at the peak. And like 1 week after Zynga bought it, users started dwindling and down to zero. Now Zynga, the company that bought it, is suffering and struggling. It's not easy. So having a great idea, that's not going to get you anywhere. It's having some magic that I'm not sure what it is. It's in the implementation, the programming, the user interface. Yes, the idea, but the idea is just a little bit of it. So to answer your question, you want to learn how to program? Oh man, it's easy. The MIT, Stanford, many universities put excellent programming courses online. If you want to learn how to program for iOS, for instance, Stanford has its top of the line, very best iOS programming app out there, free iOS app programming class out there for free on iTunes U. Just look for the Stanford iOS class. It's taught by Stanford computer scientists and Apple engineers. It's incredible. You'll learn everything you need to know to write an app in just a few months. Or Coursera, where tons of university courses are online for free, Coursera.org. Or you could go to Big Nerd Ranch. They teach iOS programming. In 2 weeks, you could learn much of what you need to know. Or maybe you want to hire a programmer. There's great places to hire programmers like Elance.com, where freelance programmers go online and make bids. You say, hey, I need an app to do this, and they'll give you a bid. Elance.com. There's plenty of places to get all this. In fact, you got to wonder, why aren't more people making billions of dollars if it's that easy? Milnock might have it right in the chat room. He says, programming is easy, good programming is hard. And it's not even the programming. You know, programming is easy. It's really just typing. It's not hard to write a good app. It's or write to write an app. To write an app that's elegant and beautiful and has that certain something that makes people go, yeah, is a lot harder. And I look at it, there are very few iOS apps where you Path is a good example, Instagram is a good example, where the design and the UI and everything is done as elegant and beautiful. But that's not really the programming. There's more to it than that. Mark in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
Oh, and by the way, I've never really seen such a more of a handsome IT person than you are.
Oh, gosh. I'm blushing. Thank you, Mark.
I'm not really
an IT person. I'm an entertainer.
A computer guy and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I called is that I have a very small law firm.
Hold on. Hold that thought. I will help you in a moment. We got to take a break. I talked too long about this programming thing. Mark, hang in there. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I got the people in the chat room all hot and bothered, buzzing like hornets, because I said programming isn't hard. It's not hard. You know, basic programming is very easy. Lots of kids program. I've seen some very good programmers who are children. If you can do algebra, you could program. A little trig, you could program. It's not that hard. Designing a beautiful program, that's hard. Understanding user interface, making it elegant, that's hard. But most programming, like 90% of it, is just typing. Back to Mark in Los Angeles. He is a lawyer, has a small law office, and has a little problem.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm one of those honest lawyers. I'll even tell people if they don't need a lawyer. But
I like that.
Competing with people, and I've read enough about the spider webs and the Google algorithms, and not an IT person, but I know that people can do the pay-per-click. If people have been around longer and get more hits, they get bumped up. But I'm on page, 90,000.
Wait a minute. What's this pay-per-click I hear about?
Well, I thought Google...
Google does not ever bump you up in the algorithm. The only way you can get high, and boy, this is a common misapprehension, and it has led to a very big market for scammers called SEO, search engine optimization. This is how you rise through Google. Very simple. They have an algorithm. It's published. It's patented. It's well-known, called PageRank. And the way you raise your page rank is by getting linked to by other highly ranked sites.
So the pay-per-click, the pay-per-word, that doesn't mean anything?
No.
I have calls from all over the world. Even dead people call me to sign me up on like the main engines. And,
scam.
If you pay 10 cents per like the word.
Scam.
Okay.
Scam. Can I say it again? And it's a risky scam. You know why? Because if Google catches you, you'll get delisted.
So they don't have any... Okay, so I heard the word scam. That's clear. So anybody that says, if you do the pay-per-click, have you heard of that pay-per-click scam then, where you someone searches the word bankruptcy? That's what my law firm does. They aren't really selling you anything. They're just ripping you off then.
Yeah, now you can buy the word bankruptcy from Google and have ads show up. Is that what you're talking about? Google will sell, and only Google does this, because only Google has the results. So Google will sell you, and it's expensive. They auction the word, so bankruptcy is an expensive word.
Right.
That's through Google, and that's buying an ad. That's not buying search results. So when you do a Google search, you'll notice there are search results, and then over on the side, there's ads. That's
right.
What you're buying.
Okay, so you're not buying a page rank.
No, page rank's not for sale.
Wow, that is a scam. Because there's no such thing as a SEO, a search engine optimization company.
Well,
that's legit.
That's not true. You can do. In fact, I should be very careful because the big PubCon convention is going on in Vegas right now, and this is a bunch of SEOs. There are legitimate SEOs, just like they're legitimate lawyers. You see where I'm saying? You see where I'm going here? There are also ambulance chasers. So in SEO, here's what they can do. They can a couple of things. One thing SEOs can do legitimately is help you with the placement of ads on your site so they get clicked more. There's a lot of research that goes into that. to help you with your ranking, not so much. What they can do is make sure that you have done the things that Google says you should do. Do you need an SEO to do this?
The meta tags.
Nope. Meta tags make no difference. Google ignores them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What does Google pay attention to? You can find out. All the details of PageRank are not published, but they patented PageRank. And when you patent something, as you know, you make it public. So we know the general outline of this. They pay more attention, for instance. And by the way, Google doesn't hide any of this stuff. If you watch Matt Cutts' excellent series of YouTube videos for webmasters, if you just search for on Google's site for webmaster tools, you'll find all sorts of great tools. But the title of the page is more important than the text in the page. The first 1,500 letters in the page are the most important words in the page. Meta tags are ignored because if you look at pages, they'll be loaded up with meta tags that have nothing to do with the content of the page. So Google early on said, well, we're ignoring those. Those are useless. They look at the content, the visible content of the page, and that's where your ranking comes from. That and links back.
Okay, is there an SEO company, and I'm not sure if it's even worth, is there anybody that is a sponsor or that you...
First of all, I would never accept any SEO company as a sponsor because too much of what SEO is snake oil.
Focus, okay.
You can do it yourself. Just, there was a great article, some years old now, but it's still mostly true, it's still completely true, on Google's PageRank patent. It was on, let me see if I can remember the website. It was Buzz something. Let me see if I can find it. Because this is so useful to know how Google calculates this. And it's easy to find an article about it. There's no secret, right?
Okay.
There's no secret. And it's really pretty straightforward. It's kind of what Google says is... It's all about the content and getting people to link to you.
Okay, and the last quick question, I'll make it very quick, is that I won't name the company that offers this. It sounds like Next, N-E-X-T. That's not the name, but that's close to what it is. They say, we'll put you on a priority listing on 200 websites. Well, only about 10 of them, anybody.
Bogus. Bogus. Scam. Bogus. Not
wow.
True.
A lot of people getting ripped off out there.
I know.
Huh?
Well, there you go.
Beware. Okay, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mark. I'm glad you called because I love being able to say this. It's bogus. So here's the article. It's on Buzzle. Thank you, James DeRuvo, our show notes taker. He knows it by heart because I mention this a lot. It's an old article, but it's still valuable. How does Google rank web pages? Read it. We'll put it in the show notes. BUZZLE.com. And the essential information in here is great. It's really what you need to know. There's not a whole lot to it. There are all sorts of risky techniques that link farms that are terrible. Google Matt Cutts. Boy, this guy's great. He is the Google spam fighter, one of the earliest employees at Google. He's a great guy. I consider him a good friend. And he has a series of webmaster videos that are so fantastic. He talks about SEO. He talks about what you need to know. That's all you need to read. You can do it yourself. It's pretty straightforward. The best way to get highly ranked in Google, have people link to you. And have good content. Actually, that's what Google says. Just have good content and people will link to you. I think this will be our last call of the day. Joe in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi, Joe. You found somebody's camera?
Yeah. Hey, Leo.
Hey.
Back at Christmas of this past year, I collect old cameras, and my sons, every now and then, if they're at a flea market or yard sale, something like that, and they find an old camera, they'll buy a camera for me. And back at Christmas, they bought me a old 16-millimeter movie camera.
Oh, wow.
And what really made this one interesting is on the bottom of the camera, and this particular camera was only made between the mid-30s to mid-40s. On the bottom of the camera, written in white paint, was Lieutenant F.C.
You know what? We're not going to get to the punchline. Oh, hey, will you call me? Let's get you as a first caller next week, Mark, because I want to hear this story. but I'm out of time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.